Hey everybody, this is Mark's friend, Pete A. Turner. I'm filling in on the intro because Mark is actually no longer on the North American continent and he's headed down, and I believe as of this instant, he is actually en route to Antarctica from South America. So I have the distinct honor of sitting in for him to do the introduction for this week's show with Powder Matt Mosler. And let me just tell you, this is an incredible tale and we're going to get to that. I actually also am in the first one to really be able to introduce a couple of new things from Finding Your Summit and Mark's work. So, you know, the show talks about overcoming adversity and finding your way through these tough times. And Matt is certainly someone who's done that. But let's talk about real quick about the e-learning course that Mark has been talking about for over a year now. It's released. It's ready to go. You can either go to findingyoursummit.com or you can go to markpattisonnfl.com and you'll be prompted and you can get a free PDF that gets you started. It explains things and it puts you in a place where you can start to either identify things, how to get after goals that you want to do, how to improve something that you're trying to improve, relationships, whatever it is. It's sort of the Rosetta Stone to get you going in the right direction, and you can find those at either spot. So that's going to get unlocked for you guys now. Also, there's an assessment tool. It's a quick 10-question survey that really gets to the heart of where it is, and it helps you to determine where you're at and then help you prioritize the things that you need to do next. All of that stuff's available. The e-learning tool is awesome. I've been in it. I've looked at it. I've seen it. I totally and fully endorse it, so I know you guys will love that. Of course, every episode is brought to you by Cynthia Besteman's Violet or Blue products. I know Mark talks about it all the time. He actually talks to me about it. He never shuts up about it. He's so stoked about Cynthia's great work. She's a past guest on the show. Be sure you go check her out. Let's talk real quick about Matt. Matt is one of those guys where, you know, he was kind of a kid, like, you know, he was the typical fat kid. He wasn't able to go out and do things. He was sitting in a station wagon, not skiing when he was at the mountains. And a ski instructor came by and said, "Come on, kid, let's get you some skis, get you on the mountain." And he said these key words: "You can do this." And Matt believed him. Next thing you know, he's doing it. His friends start to move on in their corporate lives. They're graduating. They're doing all these things. And Matt, at one point, lived in his car for 63 days so he could ski every day. And now 20 years later, he's settled down a little bit, but he's still out there seeking adventure. And wait until you hear the story that Matt tells Mark about the time a grizzly bear chased him down a mountain as he skied. Now, it's one thing to ski in dangerous terrain and get down it fast and be cool, but do it with a bear on your backpack trying to take you out. And if you don't make it down, throwing all skiing caution to the wind, if you don't make it down, you die. And this is one of those James Bond moments where he's got the bad guy, in this case, a grizzly bear, on his back, and he's headed down. And it's just an incredible tale. And Matt is such an inspirational guy. I dig it. I dig what Mark's doing. He's down there on the mountain. Now, one more thing real quick to check out. Right now, you can go to the website and you can click on Expeditions, and that will enable you to see exactly where Mark is as he goes. He's got a tracking system on there, and I'm doing it right now while I'm doing the intro. You can see that he's on his way to Vincent. If you hit the Vincent button, you can see and track that. It's already right there. It's live. So you can stream that through his Garmin device. Thanks to Garmin for that. You can follow Mark as he attacks the Vincent Massif. So look, this is a great episode. I'm stoked for you guys to have it. You'll probably hear from me a couple more times as Mark climbs the mountain. I'll go ahead and take care of these intros for a few weeks. I wish you well. Take care. And we'll talk to you at the top.
Hey everybody, it's Mark Pattison, and I am back with another awesome episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And this week, I'm very fired up because it was probably, I think, a week ago. I live here now in Sun Valley. This is where I'm broadcasting, and there's a cool little coffee shop called Java, and I was referred to this guy, Powder Matt Mosler, and by another guy who said, "I think you guys should meet." And we did, and we hit it off. And so first of all, Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, it's amazing to be here, and I totally agree, man. You're an inspiration, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I could have had coffee all day with you, but I'm grateful for the time that you were able to spend, and it was on a holiday time, so thank you.
Well, look, we're going to get into quite a few things, and you're kind of a unique soul because most people give in to the man, so to speak, in terms of, you know, you're born, everybody obviously born, but you're born and raised and you're mentored by your parents, and they typically teach you, you know, if that someday when you get, you know, mature enough to get married, then you have to have the white picket fence and do things a certain way and go to the bank and work for the rest of your life and then fall over. And for you, that is not the way that you decided to take your path. I was looking at kind of the subtitles of everything: adventurer, blogger, author, journalist, and just a free spirit. And so the first thing I guess I want to know is, like, going back into your childhood, like, where did that free spirit come from?
Well, you know, by the way, all those things you mentioned are all things you can do on the fly. So that's why I think I've gravitated to them. You can do them anywhere, and preferably in the mountains and deep snow. But how really freedom came for me, and I was a really fat kid growing up, and really didn't have much going on when I was super young, and in fact, what I had going on was stuff that people probably wouldn't want much of. So, you know, bullied and other things like that. But one day, someone in our neighborhood, you know, I think they felt sorry for me, or maybe they just wanted gas money, but they said, "Hey, we're going skiing." You know, and they asked my parents if it was okay. And they said, you know, can he come along with us? And my parents said, you bet. My parents didn't ski. That family took me to the mountains, and they got up to the mountains, and you can probably relate, the classic ski area parking lot, frozen, old station wagon. You know, the windows were crusted up with because everybody, a lot of hot air inside, and it was all frozen, you know, that kind of classic Northwestern day. Yeah. And they all, you know, vamoosed. They were all gone. They were all headed up the slopes. They were all out, you know, skiing. I was still sitting in the car. And I opened the door to get a little fresh air, you know, funny, something that I just would have never dreamed to happen to me next, and how these life moments, you know, happen, and these really powerful life moments. A ski instructor walking by, I said, "Hey, kid, what are you doing?" I said, "Nothing." He goes, "I got a lesson starting. Let's go. I'll take you. I'll get you equipment. I'll teach you how to ski." And grabbed my arm, basically, and hauled me out of the station wagon and took me up to the top of the slopes. And then he, you know, after I had obviously gotten all the gear on, he took me up to the top of the slopes, and he had taught me basic stuff. But he said, "You can do this." You know, and that power of someone telling you, "You can do this.
Wait. So go back on the story. Okay, so you're the kid that's getting bullied. You're overweight. And so now one day a group of kids or one particular kid says, "Hey, why don't you come with us to the mountains?" But as you're going up there, they probably have skis or snowboards or something. And you have nothing. Is that what I'm hearing?
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And, I have nothing.
And so the second part of that then is like, who does that? Who invites somebody that is, number one, ill-prepared, but on the other side of it, some random dude walking by and just looks at you and go, "You know, I want to be this kid's inspiration." He pulls you out of the car. I mean, what a guy. I mean, what a person to take that on and do that and encourage you. And it literally was a defining moment in your life.
Absolutely was a defining moment. And in fact, it saved my life. It changed my life forever. It totally changed course. It created a whole new river pathway for me. It was like the flood of goodness just came inside of me. And, you know, I always think that person, I never got the person's name, and I was too young to really know how important that really would have been, obviously, to be able, I'd be sending him notes every year thanking him. But that he showed me I could have wings. I started down that slope. And you know, even if you're a fat kid, which I was, you can ski. You can ski. You can go downhill, albeit fairly quickly. And I didn't really know how to stop all that well, which he did end up showing me later on. But I was so at the biggest smile. If you say the ear to ear grin, I was way beyond that. I was the mile grin, a mile of smiles. And so I was jumping up and down. And from that moment on, I knew this is what I needed to do for my life.
Huh. And how old are we talking?
We're talking around five and six. So, wow. So it was quite a moment of a, if you can think of it, where, I don't know, in families, it's really interesting, you know, where they get that trigger point or that spark starts. But every single thing, like you said, you know, most all of my friends then went and said, hey, I've got to go and do the school here, and then I'm going to go get this degree there. And then I'm pretty sure the path says I got this job, and, you know, all of these guarantees. But, you know, really, the world today has totally changed. There aren't those guarantees anymore. Back then, it was really unusual because there was much more of a guarantee of following that traditional path for a traditional job. But I really swam against the current. I was like, okay, I am going to find every way possible I know how to get to these mountains, figure out more about teaching myself the skills to navigate these mountains and the skills to make a living and doing things that I really enjoy around these mountains. Everything was focused on that.
What mountain, by the way, are we talking about where this life-changing experience happened?
You know, the wonderful mountains of near and dear to both of us in a region of the United States we both love, which would be the Pacific Northwest. So we're talking Snoqualmie Pass.
Yeah. Well, look, for those of you that don't know Snoqualmie Pass, it's about 45 minutes outside of Seattle. And the beauty about that is it is a fantastic beginner mountain. I think the top might be, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 feet. And they don't have anything, you know, we call them black diamonds, but it's really a beginner mountain in a way for a lot of kids to kind of, you know, learn their chops on how to ski in a safe way. And you know, not a whole lot of obstacles to come down the mountain. But at the same time, it's all relevant. You're 6 years old and you're probably thinking you're on the top of Mount Everest when you're going down this mountain. You've never done something like this before.
Absolutely. And I think that kick-started, you know, for me, this whole totally different outlook on life. And I don't know if 6 year olds, but I don't know what I couldn't have explained it to the extent it was very simple, you know, must do when, you know, the 6 to 14, 15. And then from 15, 16, it was how to live this, you know. So I was doing everything possible from being a ski instructor to ski racing to living in every single mountain town there was possible that you could, I could find. I think this the great thing, it was the early day sharing economy, and back then it was called ski bumming. And I met a lot of great friends through that, because it was really simple. You had to be, you know, pretty much you had to be a good person. It was self-policed, because if you weren't a good person, you didn't get a couch, you didn't get food, and you didn't get any gear or any support for gear. And yeah, it was pretty simple. If you were good, all those things worked out, and you had lots of friends, and you helped out other people the same way they helped you.
Well, that's awesome. You know, I want to reconnect on something you said earlier about really something defining your life. And the only reason why I want to bring that back up is because the other day I was working or I am working with a branding guy, and he really was challenging me in terms of defining who I am. And, you know, so I really have had to take a deep look. And, you know, I look back on my life and there was three defining moments. And in those moments, it was one of those things where I could either go through, you know, door A or door B. And so different my life would have been if I would have taken a different path of going either way. And so anyways, it just goes back to this whole thing about when mentors or people or circumstance comes into your life, you know, the type of choices that people make. And some, you know, people make catastrophic type choices, and others make life-defining choices that really shape who we all are. So, you know, it's just, it's fantastic that you were able to lead a life of venture and, as you call it, ski bumming around for a lot of years. One of the things I was reading, and I know this was, you know, obviously beyond when you were beyond 6 years old, but, you know, probably more into your teens or into your 20s. But I was reading that you actually pulled off this whole thing about living in your car for 63 days. So I don't know who does that. And I don't even know if you're like on Top Ramen and you know, it's obviously rent is cheap and it's just gas and then trying to figure out a way how to get on the hill. But, you know, where did that come from and what types of mountains were you traveling around to live that type of lifestyle?
Well, hey, Mark, it was definitely before hashtag van life was cool. And I don't think, you know, I think I was definitely the early days of real rugged van life because, you know, all these really hip, cool Sprinter vans dialed in with all the luxuries of life didn't exist back then. And I was just, you know, with an old climbing sleeping bag and my ski gear and an old gas stove, you know, and heating things up to, you're right, Top Ramen totally was a part of our deal. And but it really put me, it set my compass in a right direction, because I realized, you know, when I was out on the road that, you know, if you're only living life that with only material or financial pursuit, you know, that will eventually tighten the leash on you and reduce your joy. And so I think that it's the opposite effect happens when one heads outside with nature and letting that wonder in and letting it touch your soul. And it really changed me as a person when you're out there driving through the mountains of Colorado, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana. Those are magical places in the landscape of America and the American West, and they really, really shape one's soul.
Well, you just talked about touching nature and having that effect on you. When you and I got together again back, you know, last week in Sun Valley at Java Coffee, and we were put together by a mutual friend, Scott Greenberg, and there was no intent from my standpoint of necessarily having you on the pod because I really didn't know your story and it was just a warm introduction. He's a good dude. And so we did that. And so somewhere in that conversation, it came out that you have had some pretty traumatic experiences in nature. And that's just sometimes can be par for the course of when you spend that much time out and you're exposed to the elements that be. That certain things come up. And the first thing that just like jumped out on me was this grizzly bear attack. And I want to get into that and, you know, where was that? How did it happen? And, you know, what was the outcome? Obviously you're alive, you're well, but, you know, did you get completely beat up and bit and clawed and everything else? Or, you know, what was your story?
Oh yeah. Well, even just talking about it, it's a little bit hard. It's, I probably had, you know, after it happened, years and years of really horrible sleep and nightmares from it, and then after I, you know, through that period of time, the one of my biggest worries was that I was going to start a young family, and I was afraid to go outside, and in the land that brought me so much joy and goodness. So I really need to face my fears on a couple different levels on that one, not only to get my own, what I would call life back, you know, sleeping patterns and the wellness fact side, but then the side of adventure, which was so important to me. I needed to face the fear to be able to get outside and do that again. It happened in Montana. You know, Glacier National Park is an incredible national park, and you know, in my book, one of the best in all of the national parks across the United States are amazing, and this is one of the top ones. And if people haven't visited, it's put it on the must visit list. But if you go to that park in the springtime, it's a wonderful place to go backcountry skiing too, and the access points, some of them get a little bit better, so you can get a little higher up into the alpine. And we'd taken a three day journey across the top of the Great Continental Divide, and from one western side of the Rockies and over to the eastern side. And on that point of the, there's a high pass and there's an opportunity to climb a summit out on a couple peaks. And, you know, so when you're climb pushing to about the 10,000 foot level on those peaks, you're not thinking about grizzly bear. That's like the furthest thing away from your thoughts. Then, I mean, the valleys for sure on the way up. Yep. The high passes, maybe they could be crossing through and corridors moving back and forth, but at the top of the peaks on a, you know, jagged rocky ridge line, you know, it took, we had to, and part of it, part of our, what kind of happened to us too, is the sun had gotten so hot in the afternoon that one aspect, the southern aspect, south, eastern, western was getting super, going super isothermic. And so the avalanche danger was picking up considerably. Even the down climbing was so horrible that you were just, you know, repulsed holing deep. And, you know, so movement would have been super slow. So once we summited out, we made the kind of a, what I call not the best decision, which is typically we like to ski the aspect that we climb up. And then we know the snow, we know what the terrain's like, you know, we got an idea of that there's no hidden cliffs or, you know, what's the fall factor going to be like, you know, what are the risks stuff. So we didn't really want to do this, but my buddy and I sat there, we took our crampons off and took our harnesses off and we said, okay, you know what, we're this couloir right here looks to be the best. And I didn't want to do it. I'm, you know, you sit there with it's much harder snow. It was still in an aspect that hadn't received much sun and it was still super hard. So I was keen to kind of sit, you know, let's, let it warm up a bit, but he was kind of keen to go. And I said, okay, well, let's draw straws and, you know, and I did the bad thing for my buddy, Mark, which, you know, maybe don't ever do bad things with your climbing buddies. You know, I pulled the little straw trick where, you know, the smaller one. Okay, looks like you got the smaller one. You got to go first, you know, and so he had it off and disappeared, gone down, you know, okay. Oh, well, I didn't hear anybody yelling, screaming, you know, everything. Okay. I couldn't see him anymore. And you're dropping probably 1500, maybe 2000 vertical. So it was pretty, you know, long way, and it went out into a runout that I couldn't see, so I couldn't see them. We had, you know, with our ice axes, we create these little seating areas. So I was sitting in the little seat that I had created, and I was taking in the peaks in the distance were just these glorious, with the big cumulus clouds kind of swirling in a spring day in the afternoon. And, you know, obviously probably weather was changing, but it was really, really vibrant skies. And so, you know, you just had that moment watching things. And I'd taken, you know, everything was put away in my pack. My skis were on. I had dug a little area for them to slide back in. I had my pole sitting right there. I could, you know, really see all of the elements of right to this moment, what it was all like. And I'm looking down a really fairly steep chute, and without being able to see where it goes all the way, and, you know, thinking, okay, well, my buddy did it. Mates, you know, turns, he's obviously, I didn't hear screaming, so things must have been okay. So right at that moment, I saw a shadow. And, you know, sometimes when you're alone high in the mountains or maybe on the beach or in the forest, you know, all of us, I think, have these moments where we feel like something's there or someone's there, right? You know, with us. And sometimes those moments can be really wonderful because it could be those calming moments that we all love. But this time it felt a little weird, and I the shadow moved from across one side to the other, and I looked over and to the left, and then there was a grizzly bear, and I immediately, obviously in extreme shock, I started making my move to obviously just like gas it and go down the chute and get the heck out of here. Yeah. But as I was starting to move into the chute and starting to drive my arms forward, like any, you know, good ski racer would to keep moving balance point down the slope, I looked over to my right and there was another bear. And so now I put two and two together and we had a cub and a mom And one really, really big bear and one really big bear. So two big bears, one really big bear. And at this point, as that movement was happening, I realized that, you know, that was not on. So the mom was like, now, okay, what are you doing? You're moving towards my cub. And so she leaped onto my back of my pack. And right then, you know, she starts just going, whoa, digging in. And I'm going like, I got to get out of here. And at that same point, you know, it's just that brute force, adrenaline, everything shocks you into the moment where those moments where people say they can lift cars, they can, you know, move a BC ferry or a Washington State ferry with the push of their hand. You know, you could do anything. So I charged both arms completely forward and into that chute and launched myself down the mountainside. And when I was doing that, the mom still was right there with me on top of me. And I was still moving myself, getting my tail and head and everything moving down the hill.
Hold on for a sec. So essentially you're sitting there, you're letting your buddy go out, you're enjoying the day, you're taking it all in. And next thing, you are essentially in between the mama grizz and her cub. And before you know it, this essentially a Volkswagen is on top of you. And now you're trying to launch down the hill. But as you're doing that, this gigantic grizzly is sitting on top of you, trying to take you out as you're trying to, like, you know, get away from the situation and get down the hill and get through the chute.
That's absolutely it. And at the same time, you know, dealing with this massive amount of adrenaline, fear need to survive. And I think everybody has this incredible power inside them to get through anything. They don't necessarily, and they never know maybe how powerful it truly is, but they have it. Everyone has it, this ability to get through anything. So when I thrust myself forward, and fortunately I was, good skiing skills. So I had good balance and I had good ski strength and it was super steep. So I thought, you know, I had a chance of maybe outrunning her, but bears can go 40 miles per hour. And people who have that, there's that myth, they say, oh, well, they run downhill very fast. Well, they can run downhill and uphill a heck of a lot faster than we could ever dream of. And even with skis on, I was barely ahead of her. She was scratching the heck, clawing my tails, and I was doing very little turning.
This podcast is brought to you by Laird Superfoods. Let me tell you, these creamers are so amazing. They're super tasty, super delicious. And what they are is whole natural food ingredients mixed into these creamers. And I'm telling you, when you put this stuff into your drink, this powder substance, it is amazing. And their whole tagline is all about fueling your journey. You cannot go and actually power your way up a mountain, be in the pool, ride a big wave, unless you're properly fueled. And these guys are doing it all the right way. So where can you find this? At LairdSuperfood.com. And here's the kicker. If you use the code name MarkP20, that's MarkP20, you're going to get 20% off on your first order. So check it out. LairdSuperfood.com.
Barely ahead of her. She was scratching the heck, clawing my tails. And I was doing very little turning, you know, and if you can imagine skiing a steep chute on really icy conditions, it's not much fun going straight lining.
No,
I mean, I like straight lining stuff, but I like straight lining stuff where I know I'm going to be safe. I had no idea where this chute was going.
Yeah. And for those people who aren't great skiers, when you do shoots like that, there's a lot of, I mean, you're talking about kind of going down, but at the same time to control your speed, you're kind of taking these cut, you know, traverse, you know, almost like chopping back and forth to get down. So you're not, you know, going at 100 miles per hour. And meanwhile, you've got this grizzly. Now, was the grizzly roaring behind you as you're going? So there's this amplified by the sound and, like, you know, crazy.
Well, I would say that, you know, it's like I could see the plaque on her teeth. I mean, it was just like the jaws of doom were right in my face. And every turn I would make, she would move to the same. She would follow the flow and was right there. I could not get away from her. And the crazy thing is, you're absolutely right. You make those hop turns. You can. I typically would ski a steep chute under immense amount of control. I would do everything to control my speed so that I can make the appropriate maneuvers to get to the bottom safely. And in this case, so I was having to reverse all of that and just go like, let it loose, let it buck. And even doing that, she was right there, right there. And as we came out of the open, the apron opened up. And then I could see where my buddy had gone over to the right. And I looked forward to the left and I'm going, okay, the right, he went right and the right flattens out. And I'm going, oh my gosh, no. I'm going to flatten out on this little, plateau and I'm going to come to a stop. And then what am I going to do? You know, I'm just like ready to eat. You know, I'm one of those special dinners, you know, ready to go. And then if I went straight though, it looked like it went out, and this is probably why my buddy obviously did that. It looks like it clips out. So do I take the 20-foot cliffs and whatever else happens, or do I go out the right to my buddy? That's the crux move of where I was at now.
Yeah.
And you think about it, you know, making those decisions, you know, you always make decisions, you make decisions in the heat of the moment, you know, and I do believe, you know, there's a lot of good that comes out of our gut and making good decisions, you know, especially if you spend time, you know, outside. Nature's a great trainer. It prepares you for a lot in life. Nature throws at you so many things, and it throws at you things that you have to respond fairly quickly at, you know, whether it's weather changes, whether it's slide conditions, whether it's rock, quality of rock or change in quality of rock or the ice, if you're climbing, all of those things happen really quite quickly sometimes. And so fortunately I get there and I go, okay, I'm going to go the right way. And the right way was not going for the unknown terrain, but taking the right to the flat area. And one of my thoughts was that at least if my buddy was over there, the bear was going to get down there and see one of us.
Could you see your buddy at this point as you're coming around the corner? And the bear is still on you. Okay, so what happens next? How did this play out?
Well, and so real quickly on this whole thing, when you think about it, I turned, I went out of this flats. I'm starting to lose speed. And you know, at the bottom of the apron, obviously, that's a place where you feel more confident about really letting gas happen. Because I could see now where I was going. So I straight-lined it out and ran it all the way out to this flat little pass area. But the interesting thing, I saw my buddy's skis, but I didn't see him. So I'm going, okay, well, what's going on? And there was, the sun had beaten on this pass pretty, you know, strong. The rays hit there for most of the day. So it had already had some melting from like even some spots to ground. And so what he had done is what happens when you see your buddy getting chased by a grizzly bear? Well, you know, most of your buddies, you think they'd run over there and help you stop the bear. But, you know, he's probably doing the smartest thing, maybe not the smartest way of doing it, but the smartest thing was he was hiding from the bear. So what he'd done is he started piling rocks on him. Like, you know, humans can do crazy things when you're trying to survive. So he's kind of digging himself into a rock pile. And thankfully he was doing that because the bear heard something else. And if he wouldn't, I to this day, if he, my buddy, wouldn't have been moving rocks around, I don't think I would be here. But he was. And so what the bear did, when I came to a stop, I turned around and I did what I, you know, I was at the last hurrah, so to speak. And, you know, at that point, bear spray, yes. Look really big, yes. Poles up in the air to look strange, yes. I was doing everything. And you know, I think the bear already knew I had all the ski gear on, so I already looked strange. But I put the poles way up in the air. I had my bear spray at my waist. It was ready to go when the bear started moving towards me. But my buddy making noise, moving rocks, put him off guard just a bit. She's like going, okay, what is that noise now? I've got some other concerns. So put her radar on a different type of alert. Well, okay, this guy, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to assess what's happening here. And I later found out, so she backed down and then took off. And the reasoning this happened, what the biologist shared with me, is that this, when bears are in threatened, and probably completely why the reason why this bear was in such a, you know, a crazy location in the first place, was probably the springtime when the male, the moms have their cubs, and the big male bears, the big boars, you know, they do horrible things. You know, they eat cubs. And so this mom was probably being chased by a big male grizzly. And so she was taking her cubs up into crazy, crazy, crazy places to get them away. And then that same thing now happened with her sense of safety for her cubs. That same alarm went off again. She heard that those rocks moving and going, okay, what's that? Something's not, I know this skier guy, I'm going to get him, but now I got some rocks moving. So I need to go check on my cubs. And so she went back up to check on her cubs. And the biologist said, good thing you guys got your crap and skied your asses on down the rest of the way out of there, because she's probably going to go back up there, check on her cubs, and come back down and deal with the situation.
Yeah. Well, look, number one, you know, hurrah for you that you had this like James Bond type, you know, horror picture film escape, that you made it down this steep chute and away from the bear, and the bear's chasing you all the way down this thing, and you live to tell about it. I had a podcast last week with a guy, podcast number 80, Todd Orr, and he was actually down just outside of Yellowstone. And he works for the forestry department. He was up hiking early in the morning, and came across this female grizz and her cubs, and he's encountered grizz, you know, a number of times, but you know, nothing has ever charged him. And this time, turned out to be the case. And the female grizzly came at him, ran over him, and he had just a couple, you know, bruises and bites, but nothing severe or anything. But he decided at that point he needs to hike back down the 3-mile trail and get back to his car and go to the hospital and just make sure everything is okay. He goes down about another 6 minutes, and the bear had gone back up the hill to make sure the cubs were tucked away, and then circled around like you were just describing, and to finish him off. And she just went after him, and full on attack, broke bones, his ears like coming off, just a crazy tale. And he lived to survive. And in his case, you know, you got really big, and in his case, he played dead. And by doing that, he probably saved his own life and then got to the car. And I found him through this YouTube video. But I mean, look, however you want to slice this thing, any encounter, even if it's from your car, is intimidating. They're gigantic, and their claws are like something, you know, I've set that you find at Crate and Barrel. And you know, for you to get out of that thing alive is just a miracle, and good for you. I want to move on to another quick story. Again, I was fascinated. I didn't get the whole download, but I just wanted to bridge this, because again, it's another example of you being out in nature, and then things happen, and you got to be prepared. But again, it has an effect on your life in terms of the things that you're trying to do and the way you deal with various other circumstances. And as you know, I'm a mountain climber as well. I'm headed down to Vinson. Maybe by the time this pod actually runs, I will have now come off and hopefully successfully touched the top of Antarctica. But you were talking about falling into a crevasse and you're trapped. And I can't imagine being trapped inside of anything. On every mountain I've been on, this last one up in Denali, there's somebody who fell down about 35 feet. We had to pull them out. And it's, you know, they're intimidating, and they're nothing to play around with. So tell me about where this happened and what the circumstance was.
Well, you know, you know, it's also, Mark, amazing you on the journey you are on, because there's nothing easy about what you're doing, and the fortitude and the strength and the drive that you have to keep on is just absolutely awesome. You know, and as you know, climbing, you learn from every step, and you know, it's a thing, it's an interesting deal. Even the guides and who have been climbing forever, they're all, the good ones are always learning. And they do have times where they learn from things that aren't so good. And hopefully That is what makes them stronger, more capable, and better decision makers as they make the next steps. But it has so many variables. And we were climbing Athabasca, which is in the Canadian Rockies, and it's a pretty easy traditional general mountaineering climb, albeit we were on a route that wasn't the traditional route. And we were coming down, and we were late. We had told the climbing ranger that we would be back at a certain point, and we didn't really want to make that person upset that we weren't there. So we were hustling, and we were roped up, and we got to a point. We had some people that were extremely experienced, like tons and tons of years, way more than my years, we all agreed, and that's what I like about climbing, is take everybody's input, listen to everybody. Even I have tons of respect for the best guides in the world, where they're really taking the temperature of their team and they're really listening to the input and feedback of everybody on the team, not only around safety, but obviously around the management of the team. And we all agreed that, hey, we're off the glacier. It's cool. The rest is a snowfield. You know, we can really pick up our pace and sprint our way on down this mountain, be back in time, no sweat, all good. And within about 5 minutes of us unroping and sprinting off in joy, I hit a spot where I just, like, nothing was there. And, you know, that free fall moment is a quite, hard to explain how that feels, how much of a shock to your system it is. And I think the craziest part about it, when you're pinballing down through the ice and as you're hopefully, you know, hopefully you're doing everything, reaching out with your ice axe, trying to do everything you possibly can to stop or slow yourself down or drag yourself to some place, you know, you really don't know what's going to happen because it's darkness. And also, you know, it's like being on the rainforest out on the coast of Washington or coast of British Columbia, because it's just freezing water pouring all around you and it's to complete darkness. And I think, you know, for me, pinballing back and forth, fortunately, the thing that I did have, obviously, was a backpack on. Secondly, the most fortunate piece that I had, which turned out to be somewhat unfortunate, but fortunate probably because it saved my life, was that I had one of the coiled ropes that we'd taken off. I had it put it under the top lid of my pack, and that created with my neck the area that wedged me into two big chunks of glacial ice that stopped me.
How far down were you?
You know, 30 feet, roughly, yeah. 20, 30 feet, which is more than enough.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you know, unfortunately, the part for me is that, you know, it's about really being this heart, how you control your situation, because it's all about preservation now. Yeah. And that's a really difficult thing to do. How strong you can slow down what you're doing, keep the heat where you can, calm your mind, zoning into simple things. I do little things, like I pinch my back of my ear because that's a pressure point. And when I get any anxious or anxiety starting to flare up, where I'm worried about being in this icy room of doom, I had to pinch myself in the ear and to say, it's all going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. I'm warm. I'm in a spot that's okay. I'm fine. There's a capable team. The next steps will be unfolding. You know, I may not know all of the details, but I will be getting out of here.
So did the guys, let's back up just a minute. So for those people who aren't used to climbing high altitude or places where there, you know, crevasses, a lot of times what happens is that there are these snow bridges that exist, which are kind of these false, shelves that you're thinking you're walking through, but really it's like thin ice, right? Falling into a lake. And that's pretty much what you did. And the second part of that is, you know, when you're roped in, of course, the people in front of you, you go into ice axe arrest, where you're essentially falling on the ground, digging your ice axe into the, into the snow, and that theoretically is now going to stop, you know, any more momentum from the person who is in back or in front who's fallen into this crevasse. And in your case, that was not the case. You were not tethered in. And so now you're sitting there with the rope. The guys that had gone past it and were safe, did they have a rope as well that they could start the crevasse rescue process with you, or how did that play out?
Yes, and a bunch of little steps of magic, and you know, it's always kudos to the people you make steps with. I'm very fortunate and grateful to be able to walk with lots of great people in my life, and a very talented crew, and they got really creative because, as you know, A, finding you now, and B, their own safety, and C, how they access it, because they can either be, you know, a positive or a negative, right? They could further break away the ice chunk that was holding me together, right? So they definitely know, though, that time wasn't on their side. You know, as you know, these places get really cold really quick, and typically you go down in there and you're hot, and then in a very short time period you become extremely cold, and it doesn't take long to a shock to set in, or worse, even further down the road, hypothermia. And so they had to move methodically, quickly, but with care. And they got themselves and their act together really fast, and proceeded with caution, and one of the climbers worked their way down to where I was at, and was able to create both of the anchor points up top and hook into me, obviously, in my harness, and to be able to have me and him work together on an extraction of myself.
Yeah.
But all that time, it takes time. All of those things, you don't know what's going to happen, and it's an interesting situation for me. I don't like tight spaces. I don't like being boxed in, and I don't think lots of people do. But I'm not very comfortable in that situation. It's really good for me. I would never do that to just do it. But from a standpoint of facing the fears, the bear made me face the fears to get outside. This general fear of being in ice and trapped, you know, really just in general, from a way of showing myself that I can fight my own anxieties. I've got simple skills that I can do that, and I can move forward. And you know, I mean, it doesn't, let's just say it's that meeting that someone may be having with a job interview or with the boss, you know, those can be stressful times. And that can be just like your version of being trapped in ice can be that same situation for another person at that job interview. And I'm really a big believer in finding ways to relieve those tension points in your life and those moments that create a lot of adversity for you, with simple skills that you'll have in your own toolbox.
Well, I think this leads us into the next topic here, which is you wrote a book called The Adventurer's Guide to Living a Happy Life. And you've got 63 different meditations that, you know, help people really get through these different things. And I think you're lying if, one, you haven't been through a difficult time. I mean, I certainly have. That's, you know, again, the name of this podcast is called Finding Your Summit. People overcoming adversity and finding their way. And there's always something relatable. And we all have fears. And even though in my case, you know, I've been able to do some pretty cool stuff, and now I'm climbing these crazy mountains, you know, I'd be lying to you if I said that when I first got or get to each mountain and I'm looking up at this like gigantic thing in the sky, I don't have some kind of butterflies going through. When I used to you know, play football and go across the center, and running a lot is waiting on me to just, like, you know, cut me in two, you know, it's not a pleasant feeling, but you need to work through those, and everything is between your ears that exist. And so that's where the work needs to be done to really be able to deal with these different things, so they don't hold you back. And, you know, as you said, going back to when you're 6 years old, it's that ski instructor on Snoqualmie Pass that really helped you, you know, kind of set your path and set you free. And it would be such a shame if a couple of these different incidents in the mountains and nature, you know, kind of put you back to where you were prior to you were 6 years old. And now you're scared to go outside and scared to be in nature. And so I think it's wonderful. So tell me a little bit more about what this book is all about.
Well, I think I got to sum it up in a couple of things here for people. I really did scribble notes when I was out sleeping in my car for 63 nights, being a ski bum, and some of these things have unfolded into quite a bit of positive for my life, and I'm hopeful that maybe some of these things can be takeaways for other people too, and maybe it'll help them out as well. One of the things for me is going deeper. You know, the more involved you get, the more good vibes you receive. And I think it's like your push for the seven summits. You know, you're going deeper in something that really is meaningful and really matters to you. People don't have, they can do their own seven summits, whatever that may be for them. It could be just walking to the park that they've always wanted to go outside in winter and walk in a park. It may sound simple, but that might be a big, big deal for somebody. But going deeper in anything, passion, their pursuits, any art, all those things that matters. Another thing for me in my book that really is a big piece of it is the do good portion of it. You know, no options here. You get what you give. So, you know, making it good, you know, and really, really doing good, really, and really helping others. I mean, there's a real good reason why, you know, we do it, Mark. It's because it does make us feel good too. I mean, it's like an incredible give back. It's a really easy one. But I don't know why more people can't do it, but you go out, you help your community in any way, shape, or form you possibly can. And I mean by community, your friends, your family, and your greater community. And be that sunshine. It's in your eyes, that special twinkle that can bring joy to others. You know, take steps to make their day. Take steps to make others' day, not for your own benefit, but for theirs. And part of the thing that I think you and I both, we share all these things, but part of what's really, you know, when we're talking about nature, I mean, nature is a powerful, it gives you so much. It provides you ways to become more self-confident by the outdoor pursuits we do. It humbles us. It makes us feel uncomfortable. Being cold, you know, is really good for us. You know, I'm not saying freezing yourself, but being uncomfortable provides a way for you to reflect on the rest of your life and how grateful you are for everything. I think we all need daily reminders to be grateful for everything we have. It can be simple things. We've got so much things to be grateful for. But dance outside can be exhausting. If you get out like you did this morning, get that engine revving early every day. You know, it's just don't go to the gym, albeit the gym's great, but fresh air should smack you in the face. Challenging weather will make you think. It makes you think differently. The outside workouts are full body contact with the unknown every day. And I love that piece. And lastly, you know, being wild. I talk a lot about this in the book, is spending time in wild places. It's good. Like you standing on mountaintops, you're going to stand up there and reflect on things in a different way, a way you'll never reflect on something because of what you've done to get to that mountaintop. Isn't that right, Mark?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think what this all boils down to, and one of the things that I would have never in a million years ever thought that would be a result of these podcasts when I started these things a year and a half ago, and now I'm passing 100 episodes, is perspective. And, you know, I get to be the lucky guy on this side of the mic. And I talked to other guys. We talked about the guy with the bear attack, and, you know, I've guys with no arms, no legs and can't see and have been hit by a Mack truck. And I mean, these stories go on and on and on. And so I think a lot of times that we put ourselves in a certain box, or we have a fear of certain things, and it can be so liberating. And at the same time, as you said, you know, once you go and you step through the fear and go to the other side and then really start contemplating about, you know, where you sit in the big scheme of things, and you put perspective into it, it just puts everything into perspective, and that you can really say, well, maybe my life isn't that bad. And maybe if I did a little bit more of this or that, you know, it could be even that much better. And so that's what I challenge everybody to do. You know, anybody who's listening to this pod, is just, you know, face your fears and step into it, and amazing things can come out of it. And it certainly has helped that way for you. and certainly has worked for me. Question for you is, where can people buy this book, Adventure's Guide to Living a Happy Life?
You know, and thank you very much for spending some time with me today, Mark. I appreciate this. It's been awesome catching up with you, and I look forward to more of Amazon, any of their online book retailers, Apple, Google Books, all the regular usual outlets.
Awesome. And where can people find you on your social channels?
At Stellar, I'm Powder Matt. That's a great social channel I hope people will check out. That's STELLER. Instagram at Powder Matt. And I've got a website, powdermatt.com. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share some stories. And I hope people find their own inner ski bum, you know, discovering something that really drives that individual to connect deeper, help others, share joy, and move their body in wild and outdoor places.
No, hey, listen, I have thoroughly enjoyed this chat. I didn't know exactly what to expect. And you've been just a fantastic guest. And, you know, I hope a lot of people really are inspired by your story of adventure and free spirit. And, you know, my love to the mountains. That's why I'm here in Sun Valley, Idaho. So until the next time that we do chat, Powder Matt, I appreciate it. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great, great steps outside on your next journey.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.